This is Live from the Table, a Comedy Cellar affiliated podcast coming at you on Sirius XM 99. Raw Dog. Thank you, Noam. And the Laugh Button Podcast Network. Here we are. Dan Natterman here, sitting in the captain's chair because Noam can only be with us for about 10 or 15 minutes. But Noam Dorman is here now, and he is the owner of the world famous Comedy Cellar, the ever growing world famous Comedy Cellar. And Perry L. Ashenbrand is with us.
Hi.
Perry,
how do you do? Noam can only be with us for 10 minutes tonight, I think, because he has dinner with a very important man.
Well, I got interviewed today for more than 10 minutes by Tyler Cowen, the economist, for his show Conversations with Tyler, which was very, very nerve-wracking for me. The interview went okay. Nicole says it went okay.
Do you think she would tell you if it didn't?
No, but I can read between the lines. I think she actually thought it was good.
Reading between the lines with Nicole is something of a difficult task, but one we must master.
He asked me a lot of questions about comedy, and it always makes me uncomfortable because I don't feel like I'm any kind of expert on comedy at all, But he asked me a lot of questions, and I answered best I could.
Can you talk closer to the mic? What is going on?
I know about comedy.
That's very, very interesting that you say that because I doubt any other club owners would say that.
I don't know.
I mean, some might, but yeah. I think it would be unusual.
What did he ask Nicole? I can't even remember the questions he asked, but like really clever, smart questions. I had opinions about these things, but they're not really based on my experience owning the Comedy Cellar. Maybe they are.
Like what? Can you give us?
Well, he asked me the one thing I didn't have an answer to was like the difference between British comedy and American comedy. I'm like, I don't know. When I watch Monty Python movie or Caddyshack, I see the difference, but I don't really know it. I don't really know it in person, but they're wordier. I don't know. But other than that, like things about running a nightclub, I do understand. I don't know.
You know, there are different categories of comedy club owners. There are comedy club owners that just saw it as a business opportunity. I think Richie Tinkin of the Comic Strip and his partners fit into that category. The story is they walked into Catch a Rising Star years ago and said, wow, this place is doing great. We should open up a similar place. There are comedy club owners that really love comedy. The Stand falls into that category. Those people were comedy fans, not Dan Natterman fans, I should point out, but that's neither here nor there. But they were comedy fans. and their desire was to open up a comedy club.
Yeah.
And then there's people like Noam, who's in his own category. He just tripped and fell into it, really, basically.
Well, but I was in show business, so it's less than you'd think because I did start a nightclub, the Cafe Juan. It was very successful, and I did grow up in show business, kind of. But yes, I did trip into it.
Well, you were born in. I mean, you grew up here, so it wasn't that much of a.
I tripped into it in a sense that I inherited the club.
Right.
But
you didn't have to take the club. I mean, you could have sold it, right?
Yes, I could have. But I did have the skill to do it. I mean, I'm not saying I'm the most skilled, but I'm like it's like I inherited an aerospace company. I know calculus and stuff. Like I do know the basics of running a nightclub. Anyway, I don't know where I'm going with this.
As far as comedy is concerned, your rule is a fairly simple one. Is the audience laughing?
Yeah, that's the point. I have opinions about comedy. That's exactly it. I have opinions about comedy, but nobody should think that those opinions are the reason the club is successful. The reason the club is successful is nothing to do with my opinions about comedy. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, that's ridiculous.
No, it's not. My reason the club is successful is because I worry about the customers and I make sure the stage is right and the lighting is right.
It's all of those things.
And any idiot knows if the people are laughing or not. And everybody's laughing at that guy. I need to hire an expert to tell me whether I should book him again.
It's a little bit more. It's arguably a little bit more complicated than that.
I don't know that it is.
Of course, it is.
I don't know that it is.
Well, you succeeded, and the proof is in the pudding. But for example, if five comics are all funny but all talking about the same topics, you might do well not to have all five of them on the same show.
I guess.
So you know what I'm saying?
Never happened. That's never happened. I don't know.
You know, if you have five of the same type of humor, so that, you know, when we've talked about diversity as a, not just as a happy accident, but as a potentially beneficial thing, because you get people like variety. Variety is the spice of life, as the old saying goes. Yeah. So it's fun to hear. It's not just fun to hear Zarna because she's funny. It's fun to hear Zarna because she's talking about shit that nobody else is talking about. There's two reasons why.
Yes.
But so, I was actually going to use that as Zarna as an example, because you said that when you started booking her, she wasn't getting booked other places.
She's still not getting booked other places.
So, and I think that we've talked off air about other people like this also. But so you do have some kind of sense of...
No, I don't. I think Noam, I take Noam at his word. If the audience is laughing and laughing consistently, that act will get booked. Now, why are other clubs not doing this? That you have to ask them.
I think it's because they have their own views of comedy. Like, I think it's actually counterproductive to be too into comedy. Like you can't overthink it. They're trying to have a comedy club in their own image.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Anyway.
And also, I think a lot of times personal relationships might enter into play in the case of some club owners. They want, is so-and-so doesn't hang around enough, isn't kissing my ass enough. Noam doesn't care if you kiss his ass.
No.
He'd prefer you didn't. He'd rather you...
Although that comic, his name, the Jewish guy who, Jonathan...
Jonathan Rando.
Jonathan Rando.
He'll never perform at the club.
he no, would. Kidding, no, you're kidding, of course. But
he's not kidding.
But you know, I mean, as the classic example is Dino Badala, who used to come here and rant and rave his pro-Palestinian point of view with Noam's Israeli father, and still worked here.
Actually, the only thing that bothers me about Jonathan Randall is nothing to do with what he tweets or nothing to do with what he said here.
Yeah,
it's the fact that he seemed to be duplicitous. Like
I know, he said XYZ here,
and then went right out and tweeted the opposite of what he seemed to indicate. That's what annoyed me.
I know that's what bothered you. That it seemed, and it wasn't.
Well people, I mean, but this is very common. People come here. When you're face to face with somebody, we've seen it all the time. It's hard to be too antagonistic with somebody that's sitting right in front of you.
Yeah, but don't waste our time telling us stuff you don't really believe.
Well, that's I'm just saying it's a common phenomenon.
Straightforward.
I mean, we're not exactly dragging it out of him. He tweets it all day. It's not like, listen, don't ask me those questions about, you know, I don't want, like, this is...
People do that, though, remember? We had somebody be like, oh, how could you ask me
But that's right, but I understood her point. I think we didn't even run the show. But I was saying, with him, this is his public persona.
Right.
That's why we called him in. You're always tweeting all this stuff about Israel. Why don't you come in and talk about it? Oh, I think the Jewish people have a right to their homeland. Okay, that's number one. Number two, did we announce McDonald's are closed?
Did we announce it? Not officially.
Yeah, we can officially announce it.
Okay, we can officially announce it. Big news, everybody. We've alluded to it before, and I've tried to bring it up, and Noam chastised me for jumping the gun, but it can now be told. Noam Dorman is...
What are you doing, Dan?
I'm kidding.
I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Noam Dorman, it's big news. Noam Dorman is purchasing the McDonald's on West 3rd and 6th Avenue.
I own it.
Oh, you own it?
Well, Dorman Co. I started a company called Dorman Co.
It's original.
So now how many W-2s are we going to get every year? We get a fucking W-2 from... You know how every single room Noam sends a separate W-2.
I know. Wait, this is amazing, though.
$10.99.
This is huge breaking news, Dan. I mean, can you set this up?
Well, there's a McDonald's on the corner of West 3rd Street and 6th Avenue. It's been there for probably since Noam was a child.
Yeah, since the 70s.
For some reason, they decided to close down. I don't know why. You know, since when did McDonald's close? I mean, it was doing good business.
I think they closed because it was a lot of, you know, that block became very unseemly, and it was a lot of, like, incidents there. People being up, people having sex in the chairs. It was all kinds of ridiculous stuff going on late night at that McDonald's, and that went on for years and years and years. It wasn't, they tried their best to control it, but in the age of social media, people started tweeting that stuff out, and McDonald's just couldn't have that. I have no inside knowledge. I believe that's the reason.
And how is the Comedy Cellar going to prevent sex and late night sex and fights? I guess it's a different demographic.
Yeah, but it's not going to happen.
Nobody even made the announcement yet. Breaking news.
I just said breaking news. Noam has purchased
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Noam has purchased the McDonald's on West 3rd.
And I'm opening a new comedy club.
I guess I didn't say that part. Yeah, right. He's not opening up a Popeye's Chicken, which, by the way, might well be quite lucrative.
I'm not allowed to. The terms of the deal are I can't be used for fast food for 20 years.
Mazel tov.
Is there anything else you could do with that space besides a comedy club that you would find to be lucrative that you could think of?
I'm allowed to have, I can't have comedy. I'm sorry. I can't have, what did I say? I can't have fast food. I can't have cannabis. And I can't have adult
entertainment.
Or even porn. Or, you know, can't open one of those fantasy shops, whatever. So what's left? Could be a CVS, but it's not really a good location. That could be a restaurant. I mean, there's not much.
Okay, you're opening a new room.
In keeping with your brand, you're opening up another Comedy Cellar club that, and you were toying with a potential name. I don't know if you've decided that or wish to go into that.
The Menachem Dorman Comedy Theater.
I love it.
Menachem Dorman was Noam's father, who started this club. I just got choked up for a second there. He was the original owner of this club.
Yeah. That's so beautiful.
And it's the Menachem Dorman Comedy Theater.
I was raised right, Dan.
Now, will strident anti-Zionists come to the Menachem Dorman Comedy Theater? I don't know.
I don't give a shit. This is from my father.
Well, be that as it may.
They'll come. Nobody cares.
Will Mo Amer say, leave his avails and say, any room except the Menachem Dorman Comedy Cellar? I don't know. Probably
they
not.
They can call the McCellar.
Hilarious.
That's not.
Well, this is exciting news. I look forward to seeing a beautiful new room. I assume it'll be beautiful. I assume you'll pull out all the stops to make it a gorgeous new room.
I'm going to try. It's going to have a mezzanine. It should be pretty nice.
We're going to have a merch bar.
What's a merch bar?
To sell T-shirts and hats.
I don't know. This merch thing, everybody keeps for years, you need to sell merch. You need to sell merch. I'm sure it's true.
It is true. We've been talking about it for years.
Anyway, as I've said before, I'll say it again. I don't know that it'll benefit me that much financially. I'll enjoy going there. I enjoy a beautiful new room. Do you anticipate a potential cannibalism of the other rooms, such that perhaps maybe you'll close down one of the fat black pussycat rooms and just shunt all the people there and just...
I don't anticipate it in the short term. Long term, wouldn't surprise me. I would add that this room is going to be freestanding, so it could do other things. So, like, you know how City Winery does a lot of music and then a few comedy acts? We could do, like, City Winery has, like, a Beatles brunch. Like, this, I own the whole building and there's no tenants. Like, we could do a music from time to time. We could do other things there. If business contracts at some point, yeah, I could close.
When do you anticipate starting construction?
I already started the plans. I got to go. I anticipate starting in, like, a few months.
Oh, wow. Okay. Hey, John Marco, you missed a big announcement, but we'll brief you. Sure. Noam, officially, you probably heard the rumors, but Noam...
I'm leaving you. I'm sorry. You were doing your podcast with Dan.
Hey.
Yeah, I don't know if you were looking forward to doing a podcast with Noam, but that's not going to happen. Okay. He got a last-minute dinner invitation, but you have enough to talk about, I'm sure, and you're wearing your Cosette shirt from Les Mis.
I am.
John Marco is a lover of Broadway musicals.
You know what we call those Jews.
What do we call them?
I don't know if Noam was making some kind of...
I was making some joke from the
90s. Joke about your sexuality or not.
Sure. That's to be expected. I've gotten it my whole life. When I went... You know how many people in high school I saw come out during acting class? All the time. I had this teacher, this guy who's having trouble with a romantic scene. He started crying. 15
years old.
And the teacher said, okay. He's like, oh, I'm having trouble. I don't think I like women. And the teacher said, okay, that's fine. Do you like watermelon? And he was like, what the fuck? And he said, if you like watermelon, just pretend she's a watermelon. And that's how you connect to her romantically. And he did the scene again.
And he nailed it.
Amazing.
And he nailed it.
And he fucked the watermelon.
Fucked the watermelon. He's now married to a watermelon-shaped woman.
I'll see you later.
All right.
It's not because I got a better dinner invitation. I screwed up.
Talking to
I
the
screwed
mic.
Up my plans, and I can't not do what I have to do now.
I appreciate you here for a second. You called me gay and then you left. That's a fun. Good to see you.
Well, you wear a Cosette shirt and you're going to get some pushback.
Well, why?
Gianmarco
Les Mis is a manly show. It's about the French Revolution.
But also, you're trained as a theater person, aren't you?
I went to college for musical theater.
Yeah, okay. I knew I didn't get that wrong.
And the fact that I knew that was Cosette perhaps puts me under some degree of suspicion.
That is true. We should have pointed out. You said, I couldn't even, if you had asked me,
yeah,
you didn't I wouldn't even know it was Cosette.
You didn't know that was Cosette?
No, I'm not, if I'm being honest.
Yes, Cosette, forbid me now to die. I'll obey.
Hey, you must be, you seem like you're a musical theater fan.
I like Les Mis.
That was great.
That was excellent.
I happen to like Les Mis a great deal.
Who did you see the original Broadway cast?
No, I saw the Broadway cast with Craig Shulman as Valjean because my friend Renee Glicker, who used to work, be a waitress at the comic strip,
wow,
was a college friend of his, and so that's. And then we went out to eat afterwards. So it was weird. We went to see the play, and then I went had like steak and eggs with Valjean.
That's incredible.
But anyway, yeah. So no, I like that play. And
how many times have you seen it?
I've only seen it once.
Okay. Do you want to give Gianmarco a proper
introduction?
Is there cold water?
There's regular water.
Sure, I'll have regular water too.
Gianmarco Cerezi.
Hello.
This is not his first time on this
Thank
show.
You.
He's been here before. He's a stand-up comic who's been featured on Comedy Central, Netflix, PBS, and his comedy special Shelf Life is available on Amazon. Was just nominated for 3 New York Emmy Awards. Interesting. And he'll be headlining the Blue Note Hawaii on the 3rd of November. We got some time. In Honolulu.
Wait. Where you get that?
This is what...
You sent it to me.
This is what...
I sent this to you?
Yeah.
I think this was last year.
Oh, you've already done the Blue Note Hawaii.
Yeah, you guys missed
it.
It was
oh
a great
God.
Show.
All right, so you're
right.
So you tell us what's going on.
I got a podcast called The Downside, and I just got social media. I'm just like everyone else. I'm posting crowd work clips. Me yelling at audience members.
Okay, all right. Well, that's the thing. People post crowd work clips because they don't want to burn their material.
Yeah, but these days, you put your material too. Who the fuck cares? No one's watching it. The world's fractured. You're going to burn it? That means two people saw it.
What about my idea was, if you're going to do crowd work, why not put plants in the audience and just and do the most...
I tried that. Yeah. I did a crowd work where I kept bringing it back to my dad, and then my dad ended up being in the audience.
Like you could choreograph the crowd work to make yourself sound like an absolute genius.
Let's do it.
I'll
be a plant for you anytime. You tell me the show.
Well, I got to figure out the right joke, but tell me, like I have a killer joke about Belarus, and then you say, I say, so where are you from, sir? Belarus, and then I hit them with a joke that I've been working on for literally 6 months about Belarus.
I got to learn the accent, too. That's a
No, you don't, because nobody knows what the accent is.
Sure. A Belarus.
That's fine. No one knows what the Belarus accent is.
Could I be Cousin Sheila?
I guess.
You don't have a cousin fucking
joke? I have a Cousin Sheila joke, but it's not a joke that requires crowd work. It could be used that way.
Sure. Anything can be turned into...
So that's what I'm saying. I'm wondering why more people aren't doing that, or maybe they are doing that.
I think people kind of look down on it. I feel like some old crowd work comics were accused of that, and it was looked poorly upon.
Well, who gives a shit? This is the new age. It's the new age where it's all about clicks and likes.
Sure. I mean, we can get down in the dirt. Real cynical.
I think that no holds are barred.
Sure. I just think it would be tough. You got it. You would both have to be really good actors to make it. And you got to make it not perfect. If it's too perfect... People go, it doesn't feel like it's real. The whole point of crowd work, the reason no one wants to watch this shit anyway is because in the moment it's cool because it was in the moment. But then you film it, you edit it, you caption it. It's like, okay, this wasn't worth it. It was cool in the moment. You're shitting on the wallpaper of the room, but no one gives a shit on Instagram anymore. We're ruining stand-up comedy.
No, it's possible. It's possible. It's possible.
And I'm at the forefront of it.
Well, I mean, we are glutted, but what we were announcing when you were walking in is that Noam owned... Were you here for this? Noam bought the McDonald's.
I heard a rumor.
Okay.
The
rumor's confirmed. Noam bought the McDonald's on West 3rd and 6th Avenue.
Correct.
Free quarter pounders for all the Cellar comics.
No, well, no.
No more quarter pounders.
No more.
No, no more quarter pounders. Just jokes served as you like them.
The Menachem Dwarman.
It's going to be called the Menachem Dwarman Comedy Theater. You may not remember Noam's father, Menachem Dwarman.
It was before my time. I'm familiar,
but
of
he's
course.
The one who started this club along with Bill Grunfest back in the 80s. And
uh-huh.
And that hence the reason why Noam owns the club today.
So which comic is going to have the best "this used to be a McDonald's" joke? And will it be you?
Oh, well, have you already started thinking of that?
We're going to the McDonald's. We're all going to come up with some variation of the McDonald's joke. Yeah. I always knew. My mom always told me I'd wind up working in a McDonald's. There you go.
Not bad, right off the cuff.
Now, the question is how long before you can no longer really tell this would used to be a McDonald's? I mean, eventually it'll get stale.
Sure. Unlike a quarter pounder.
Which they keep in a special plastic film. But just like, which brings up a topic, I think COVID jokes are evergreen because COVID's a huge topic. I mean, COVID, the Civil War. I mean, there are things that are so big, you can always talk about them. But what I do have an issue with is when comics say, well, it's good to be back doing comedy, huh?
Mm.
And now you've heard that.
Yeah.
I won't mention names, but there's comics that are like, oh, well, we're back. Thanks for, past couple years, we were doing comedy. No, for the past couple years, we've been doing comedy right here.
There, you see those comics, that now they're like, I did my first show since COVID. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
What?
Still?
Yeah.
You're
we're in New York, so there's some people here. I did a podcast a couple months ago, and they were like, so have you gotten a social situation still weird for you post-COVID? And I was like, get the fuck out of here. They're just as weird as they were before COVID.
How do you feel about Kennedy being shot at this point?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's COVID is, I mean, it still exists, but as a thing, as a talking point, it's history, and we can reference it as history.
Sure.
And I will say in my act, during COVID, we used to do comedy on Zoom because that's what happened. But I'm not going to say, well, it's finally good to be back on a real stage.
I think about when I'm like 60 or 70, if I'm still alive.
Being
on stage and doing that thing of like COVID. And for the youngins, COVID was this thing of like that age where you'll have to
explain it.
Well,
I don't know. I don't know that COVID will have that kind of staying power.
For sure.
But it may or may not. Kennedy does. Obviously, it's going to tell any 10-year-old about John F. Kennedy or Pearl Harbor.
The whole world shut down.
I know, and we'll say, but if you talk about you're right.
I just wonder if it'll change
the way we live
our lives, or like, if I had known, like, what am I going to tell my kids? Like, just so you know, guys, the world could shut down. I've seen it happen before.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen before.
Well, I don't know. We'll see.
It's like people who experienced a war have a different perspective than I do, in my lifetime of like, oh. You could get sent to war.
Right. Or like...
You take the fact that you can walk out of your house, go to a restaurant, you take a little less for granted.
That's
when you know that there was a time in history when you couldn't do that.
That's right. That's right. It's like kids who were alive during September 11th. I mean, I think you do have a little bit of an appreciation of how, like, everything could change in an instant.
All right, I'll go with that.
Yeah.
I'll go with that.
Yeah. I'm such a grateful person because of 9/11. I count my blessings.
Hilarious.
Gianmarco, your podcast is called The Downside.
Mm-hmm.
How does it distinguish itself from all the other podcasts? How are we distinguishing ourselves? I think we distinguish ourselves because we have the owner of the Comedy Cellar with us, except he's never here. I like to hear his perspective on things.
Of course.
He just said before you got here, he doesn't know anything about comedy.
Does he really mean that?
Yes.
But
he knows how to book people that get laughs. He looks at a comic.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know that booking, and I argue with him because I don't think it's quite this simple, but he basically, his philosophy is are they getting laughs? Book them.
Sure, but that's not true. There's hacky comedians who don't make their way into the Cellar that kill.
If they kill, they're coming. I don't think there's anybody that kills here that Noam's not booking.
He kills here, but I'm saying I know comedians that kill in a hacky way that somehow don't end up in certain places. Well,
okay, because maybe they're not killing here.
They end up making a lot more money in the cruise lines, but...
They may not be killing here with
this audience.
Sure, sure. Maybe this audience is a bit more sophisticated. Maybe they're not. I don't know, but... But anyway, the downside.
The downside.
How do you? How is the downside? There's so many podcasts. How does the downside... What's the upside to the downside?
I think it's just a real encouragement for whoever comes on to not feel that edge that we do throughout life, to be a little grateful or positive or like count your blessings. I really want a place where not just people can like share their you know their dirty laundry or their failings, but somewhere where they can really just be a piece of shit and know that me as the host, I'm gonna out piece of shit them, so they don't need to worry about looking bad. I'm never gonna say like, well, you know, remember at least we get three meals a day. At least you have your health. And sometimes people, they comment on the podcast like, oh my God, they complained about Sweetgreen running out of bread. They should be grateful. And I'm like, well, that's not what this fucking show is. You want that? Go home for Thanksgiving and talk about how grateful you are.
So
that's not what my podcast is.
The show is for people that are pissed.
It's the opposite of Thanksgiving.
And don't mind sharing that they are pissed.
Yes.
And could complain. Be pissed, disappointing, you can complain.
And about themselves. Like you know, I had this thing recently where I have a thing with workout classes, where CrossFit and mm-hmm. some classes, you can take off your shirt. I think everyone should be allowed. I think nipples, I'm a pro nipples person. And then I took a SoulCycle class. There's no sign that says no nipples. And so I take off my shirt. And then the teacher very loudly to the whole class goes like, keep your shirts on, people. And I was humiliated. I was embarrassed. And I go, you know what? What is this? What is this? How is this not connected? Why don't you cover up your shoulders? Why don't you cover up your belly button? Why don't we all put on sweaters? This is a class for sweating. And I'm a hairy Jewish Italian man. I'm sweating. I feel disgusting. I'm drenched. What is me taking off the shirt to? So a lot of people would go, hey, buddy.
Not a big deal. Can put your shirt on.
And I go, no. Who are you, the Catholic Church? Get the fuck off my body. Yeah. I'm going to take off my shirt. And that's what the downside is, where I can at least say that. Without pretending that I actually, right. I feel.
First of all, I agree with you.
There's a place for the downside.
Sure.
There's a place for the downside. There's a place for negativity.
And it's on Gianmarco's podcast.
And I'm happy to do it. As somebody who's got a lot of downside.
Sure.
Thoughts.
We would love to have you on.
Oh yeah, Dan.
Do you co-host it with somebody?
So it's my good friend Russell Daniels. He's a he's a sketch comedian. He's currently in Titanic off Broadway, big off Broadway hit show.
Oh, okay.
And he's very, very funny. And we just have a good friendship.
Is that like the Titanic, but a little?
It's like a gay. I think it has gay in the subtitle, but like it's like a celebration of Titanic. It's narrated by Celine Dion, and it's like there's a RuPaul's Drag Race segment, and he plays Rose's mother. And you know, it's belting and singing and fabulous and very funny show. Off Broadway at the Daryl Roth Theater, 8 shows a week.
Titanic. I think your first crime was going to a SoulCycle class.
You don't like spin?
I want to try SoulCycle.
It's that vibe of.
But that's everybody already.
Everybody put your shirts back on. It's like, oh, I thought this was like supposed to be like cool and chill and ride the fucking. And no, I don't like spin actually.
Well, no, I mean, no one does. The whole point of spin is to distract you from the fact that you're just moving your legs in a repetitive circle.
No, I'll go.
Well, you're
so
burning
far.
Quite a few calories and getting that heart rate up.
Sure. What do you? What
there
do you
are
do?
Lots of ways to do that.
What do you do for exercise?
Cardio and resistance. You know, I don't. Yeah, I mean, you know, a light amount, but
I feel like you're like Don Draper in Mad Men. You just pull open your drawer, you take out a big springy thing, do like three of these.
No, I go to Equinox because I enjoy their steam room. It costs a little extra, but I enjoy the steam room. Without the steam room, I don't have the motivation to go.
And
my
shirt is gay. Jesus Christ!
Well, I try to keep things G-rated in the steam room, although I can't speak for everybody else. There have been a couple of times when I was a younger man, your age roughly, where somebody started masturbating.
Really?
Yeah.
At the Equinox?
Not at the Equinox that I go to now, but another Equinox.
Was it just the two of you in the room?
It was the two of us. It happened twice, and each time was a different person, and there were two of us in the room. Yeah.
And was he making eye contact, or was he just like, I'm going to do this over here, you do whatever you want to do?
I don't recall the eye contact. He was stroking his hard penis, and I just left. I probably should have said, what the fuck are you doing, and complained. They got him demembered.
Sure.
If you will, by demember, I mean not his penis cut off, but his membership revoked.
Uh-huh.
But,
yeah.
You know, he shouldn't be doing that. But I just left. And
Were they hot? Were they good-looking guys?
No, not to me. I mean, I'm not going to say I never think a man is attractive, but for me to think a man is attractive, he's got to be very attractive, because I'm not gay.
Very attractive, yes. For,
like, John Marco probably is an attractive man, analyzing him.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I don't find him attractive.
Mm.
However, if you get to the level of, say, a Jeff Dye.
Jeff Dye, the comedian?
The comedian.
You could have picked, like, Brad Pitt model. You just picked a good-looking comedian.
Well, because I'm talking comedians.
Yeah, sure. If Matt Rife came out of here, I'd be like, holy shit.
Matt Rife, I would say, yeah, that's kind of hits you over the head with a fucking baseball bat.
Wait,
kind of obvious.
It is
so
true.
You're saying that...
I'm saying John Marco's just normal good-looking. Regular
good-looking. So he is good-looking, but just like...
I think so.
You can't... Okay.
I think he is.
But Jeff Dye, you would say...
Jeff Dye, it's obvious. And
really?
Matt Rife is obvious. John Marco, I think girls...
But are you attracted to Semitic men?
I'm not attracted
men?
To you at all.
I'm Semitic. I mean, some people
what I'm saying
like...
is I think women would probably enjoy... You're slightly goofy-looking, and you're tall and kind of... And I think, Nicole, do we have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, he's got a great smile. Great personality.
Thank you.
Great personality.
Great personality.
Oh, that matters. That really matters.
To a woman, that matters.
Sure. I think it's just like my girlfriend is really into like Jewy looking guys. So for me, like I am her, at least she tells me this, she could be full of shit. But that I am her, it's this kind of thing she likes.
Okay.
Me, Jeff Goldblum, Adrian Brody.
Brody, yeah.
You know, for some people like Adrian Brody, like that nose, they see that schnoz between their legs and they go, yes.
Adrian Brody, who's actually half, I think, Catholic or something.
Are you sure?
No, Adrian Brody's Jewish.
He's partially Jewish. Yeah, he's like half something else.
Okay,
But so is John Marco. John Marco, you're, what is it, half Italian or a quarter Italian?
No, I mean, my mom is Jewish. My mom is like Jewish.
Okay, so by Jewish law, you're Jewish. But ethnically?
Yeah, ethnically, my dad is somewhat Italian. I don't know. I've never done the DNA test because I'm scared it will be...
Too Italian?
Too little. I mean, what if I found out I'm 2% Italian?
But your dad's Jewish?
But his name
is... My dad's something, but he's Italian. Yeah, his name's Sorese. Yeah.
So how did he grow up? When he grew up, did he grow up with any religion?
He grew up with I'm sure, just like I grew up, where his dad probably exaggerated his Italianness because it's some way for them to connect to their heritage, and they like it. They like the feel. My great grandpa was named Luigi, and he came from Italy. I know that, but that's it.
That's all you need, honey.
That's all I need.
That's
Luigi.
All you need.
So if you did a DNA at 23andMe, whatever. There would be some Italian in there. Just by the way, getting back to Adrian Brody, he was born in Woodhaven, Queens, the son of Sylvia Plaschi, a photographer, and Elliot Brody, retired history professor. Brody's father is of Polish-Jewish descent. Brody's mother was raised Catholic, born in Budapest, Hungary, and is a daughter of a Catholic Hungarian aristocratic father and a Czech-Jewish mother. So he's one quarter ethnically not
That's
Jewish.
That's right. I've met him and his mom. She's a great photographer. And a very cool lady, I might add. First of all, I think that Adrian Brody is considered like super good looking, like across the board, isn't he? Isn't he kind of like...
I don't know, but I do remember once a girl saying that she thought Adrian Brody was good looking, and I said to myself, advantage Netterman.
Of course. And he's no Jeff Dye, but he's a good looking guy.
But anytime if a woman says that they think, or somebody that's good looking as a celebrity has some resemblance to you...
Sure.
You know, if I say, what actors do you like? If they say, Steve Buscemi, I think is interesting looking.
Interesting looking. Who's the hottest actor?
If they say Ray Romano, I say, I got a shot here.
Sure.
Who's saying
Ray Romano and Steve Buscemi ever in the history of the whole universe?
I've heard Steve Buscemi. I never heard Ray Romano. But I'm sure, I mean, look, Ray Romano is also very wealthy and famous. Women, thankfully, thank God, I think are a little bit more forgiving. Of male imperfection, physical imperfection.
Sure, you more often see, especially with age, you see like attractive women with unattractive men. You don't see it as often, the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
When there's something, you know, a big gap. You know, who's the lead singer of the Rolling Stones?
Mick Jagger.
You see Mick Jagger with some, you know, hot young thing. You never saw Angela Lansbury with
a hot young
Jeff Dye.
Well,
that
I
would
mean,
be funny.
Is she still alive? I think she just died.
No, she died last year.
Angela Lansbury?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
she was kind of a bitch.
Everywhere
in
she
real
went,
life.
Somebody
she was a bitch?
In real life. In my
What did she do to you?
We were at the Brooklyn Botanical Garden bike fundraiser, and my friend and I went up to her, and we're like, "Oh my God, we love you so much!"
Yeah, she was 96,
and she was like,
"She had 2 years left to live. What did you expect?"
She was not. What'd she say? Not having it. I don't know. She was just not impressed. Listen, you can be great. This is a very long time ago, but you can be gracious about it, right?
Yeah, but I think we can never, like, unless you really are that famous for that long.
All right.
You can never understand, like, when you need to go to the bathroom and you still have to take the press pictures and you're going through a fight with your ex and someone's like, "Hi," and you're just like, "Please, no, I can't meet this energy right now."
Too bad. You fucking left the house. That's what you signed up
well,
for.
Well, I don't know that that's what you signed up for. First of all, you don't sign a contract saying, "I hereby bequeath all right, title, and interest to my personal life and private."
No, this was at an event, though. This wasn't like going up to somebody at a table in a restaurant.
I agree. I hear what you're saying.
Like, this was like a public thing. Like, we weren't some like...
I think it's so easy. Like, celebrities either, this celebrity was the nicest. And like, what do you mean? They held the door open for me. Or they were the meanest. What do you mean? They kind of said hi. Like, the ability for these people to be either the best people or the worst is pretty small.
No, but she was really a bitch. No, I'm just kidding.
if you said, like, "Yeah, Angela Lansbury came to my house and put down my dog against our wishes," I'd be like, "Wow, she sounds like a real piece of work." Yeah.
Listen, here's the thing. You have such expectations. Like, I loved Murder, She Wrote so much.
Of course. Yeah.
So you have these expectations, and then, of course, people are just
human. Wasn't Murder, She Wrote on Sunday nights? I never watched it. I was always so depressed on Sunday. School was starting.
Why? You didn't like school?
No. I mean, I liked after school and hanging out with my friends from school and Friday night, with friends from school. I liked the school, that aspect of it, but I didn't like going there. I didn't like waking up in the morning and going to school.
Were you a good student?
Yeah, I was a good student. So what was the time slot of Murder, She Wrote? It's like Murder, She Wrote. Isn't there a song?
I don't know anything about Murder, She Wrote other than she's in it.
I think it was Sunday night.
What was that show? I don't even remember. I don't even remember.
Everywhere that bitch went, somebody got whacked.
Was it Law and Order? Law and Order esque.
Like, I think it was like the predecessor to SVU. Maybe
did it get into her personal life at all? Was it ever like, "Oh, she has a boyfriend now," or was it like, "Just I'm solving a case"?
I don't remember. I don't remember anything about it. Actually, I don't even know why I wanted to say hi to her.
Sure, sure.
Dan, are you with us?
I'm just trying to find out if it was Sunday night, because
okay,
in my memory,
cares?
It was Sunday
She came
night.
To my school. She did a master class at my school, or like a Q&A.
Was she awesome?
She was fine. I mean, she was old. She was old. Right. But I was a big fan. I mean, from her musical theater days, Sweeney Todd. Mm-hmm. Her and Sweeney Todd is legendary. I think I saw her, I believe I saw her in A Little Night Music on Broadway, and she was excellent.
Wow.
Her, and then I saw Elaine Stritch.
Wow.
Two wonderful.
After 11 years on Sunday night, Murder, She Wrote moved to Thursday for the 95-96 season.
95 season?
Yeah, yep. I didn't know it went on that long.
No. 90, the year 1995 to 1996.
Yeah, the season.
Yeah, no.
Murder, She Wrote.
She thought you were saying that it ran for 95 seasons.
Oh, no.
95 seasons.
Oh no, obviously not. Not
just
even
breaking every.
Not even The Simpsons has been on for 95 seasons. Although they might get there. They might get there one day.
How old do you think she was, dear Christ? Because she's one of those, like, she was old when that started.
Yeah, she was already old. She was already like one of those people that my parents would be like, "Oh, is that Angela Lansbury?"
That was like.
I was watching like Golden Girls. I've only seen like two episodes, and I'm like, Betty White is old in this old show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she like stayed that age for a long time.
And she was the last one to die of the.
Yeah. And she almost made it to 100. I think she died at 99.
She kind of let us all down, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I was really looking forward to a 100-year-old Betty White taking the stage for her 100th birthday. I mean, she couldn't hold out another 2 weeks. How hard could it be? Just you know, you're this close. Just hold.
Maybe
on.
You don't want to.
Why
at
don't
that
you
point.
Well, you want to get to that big 100. There's a neighbor in my, I have a, there's a woman in my building who's 100 years old.
Yeah.
And I got a joke out of it. God bless her.
And did you throw a big party? Did you make a big fuss out
of it? No, but I went upstairs. They said there was a sign in the lobby, happy 100th birthday to, I forgot her name. In my joke, it's Myrna. But in real, because that's an old person.
You had 100 years to learn her name, and you couldn't learn her goddamn.
Well, I never knew. I never met her.
Oh.
I just saw a sign in the lobby. It said, happy 100th birthday to whatever, Esther, Estelle, whatever it was.
Myrna, let's just call her Myrna.
It wasn't Brittany.
I see.
In apartment 6H or whatever the apartment was. And so I said, if you want to drop off a card, drop off a card.
Oh.
So I went and got a card. I never met the woman, you know, and I don't even think I could, I don't think there were any cards for 100-year-olds. I don't even know if you, I mean, I guess there are, but I didn't find one.
You found, got one for a 10-year-old and added a zero. And
I could have done that.
Sure, that would have been kind of cute.
And then I went up and I knocked on the door and her maid, and she, I didn't meet her, her maid, she was in the room.
Jesus Christ, this is so sinister. She's a maid?
Well, the woman, her nurse, whoever.
Maybe she's not alive and the maid just wants a bunch of free cards and is faking the whole thing. I had someone died in my...
But anyway, I gave the nurse, I said, tell 100, yes, I'm Dan from, you know, 5B, tell Estelle or whatever it was, happy birthday.
Why couldn't you meet her?
She was, I don't think she was well. I don't
she's
think she was...
I'm sure she's COVID cautious. Let me tell you, someone who's still thinking about COVID is the 100-year-olds. But it's weird. I've had someone die in each one of my apartments. Suspicious. But it's kind of weird because you may have seen them once or twice, and then one day you go to your door, and there's outside in the two stairs, there's like two candles. Mm. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, someone died at my girlfriend's place, and they left a letter. They said, if any of you know this person's next of kin, you know, the body was probably there for 2 weeks. Someone smelt it.
Oh, my God.
And it's just like the number of people that die, it happened with my building, too, like just a smell
emerged.
I'm
sorry, did you just gloss over and somebody smelled it?
I just imagine that's how they found out.
I would think it would take longer than, I mean, shorter than 2 weeks for people to be like, there's something weird going on.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not an expert in decomposition of corporal decomposition, but I don't think it takes 2 weeks.
How long would it take for a smell to emerge, you think?
I would think just a couple days.
Really?
I would think so.
Doesn't your body just sort of liquefy?
I think it takes a little longer.
Yes, at some point.
At some point.
At some point.
But what? I mean, let's say you poop yourself. Even that is going to stay within your apartment. I mean, it depends how big your apartment is,
yeah,
really.
This is a morbid conversation, but...
I'd like to get a mortician on this show.
That might not
be a bad idea. I do know someone who worked at a morgue. It's actually the most listened episode of our podcast. It was horrifying. Yeah, you got to be ready for that conversation.
Tell us
Lauren
something.
Petrie. How long before a body starts smelling?
No, what's tell us guess? Something that the mortician...
Well, I mean, I would say after 45 minutes of Soul Cycle.
It says 24 to 72 hours.
I was going to say 48.
Post-mortem, internal organs begin to decompose due to cell death. The body begins to emit pungent odors. Rigor mortis subsides.
I was going to say 48.
Okay, so...
This one's going, it's in there for 2 weeks.
2 weeks? Well, maybe if you, you know, use Old Spice. That could be an ad. Like, Old Spice, they didn't find the body for 2 weeks.
That's good.
Not bad.
That's good.
Not
that's
bad.
Good.
This is the downside. This is what we're talking
this
about.
This is the downside.
This is the kind of thing you might talk about on the downside. Not mm-hmm. everything is happy in life.
Yeah, this morgue one was tough. I mean, she shared a story that I actually moved to after the credits because I thought it was too horrifying about there was a man who died. Honestly, it's so fantastical. But she says it's true that there was a guy and he had, you know, a dildo in his ass and he choked on a dildo in his mouth and they took it out and maggots came out and that's what we're talking about here.
It was in his mouth, you said?
It was both. I mean, he had one, he was filling them all.
Oh.
But he died only because of the mouth one.
Why, he choked?
Yeah.
Was he by himself?
I mean, I don't know. I imagine if he was with someone, they left.
Yeah, yeah, well, you know.
How big were these dildos?
Big enough to kill a man.
He couldn't pull it out?
I mean, they asked him, but he wasn't able to answer.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm just saying, like, but like, that's, if you want to have someone from a morgue, like, get ready to talk about.
Oh, I am ready.
Crazy shit.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's their everyday.
That doesn't sound like something's off there. Like, if you have a giant dildo in your mouth, and I'm not speaking from personal experience, but you can. pull it out. Like, there's no reason to choke on it.
There might be something John Margo's not telling us.
You slip or you drop it.
I don't know. Maybe he went too far in and he swallowed it.
That doesn't make sense. If you swallow it,
there's some that aren't that big that might be you could swallow it.
But they said they pulled it out and
They pulled it out when they got to her with.
And maybe yours are all the wall attached ones, but we're talking about a portable one. You know, little. You could choke on anything. I could choke on this cap. I could die.
Anything.
The cap,
anyway.
But not the whole bottle.
Anyway, if you enjoy this kind of macabre talk, the downside is the underbelly. What else might you talk about in the down? That's obviously, I don't expect that every episode talks about something quite that horrifying, but...
No, talk about bad parent relationships, divorce, a lot of divorce.
Are you a child of divorce?
Child of divorce. Both parents have been divorced twice.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you have any full siblings?
No, I have 4 younger half-siblings, so 2 total.
Okay. And is it close? Are all...
We're close, but I always wonder, there's 3 on my mom's side, 1 on my dad's, and I always wonder if the 3 on my mom's side...
Are you the oldest?
I'm the oldest, okay. Yeah, because I'm the only one from the first marriage. Right.
Yeah, he's the only child of that marriage, yes.
In a way, I really experienced because my mom had kids first, so at my dad's, I was an only child, and then at my mom's, I was just one of a bunch. And I think I experienced a real, like, you know, you get to feel that feeling of being only child.
Mm-hmm. There is some research to suggest, and I think I've mentioned it on this show, but I'm not sure, that artists and performers are more likely to be the youngest child.
Sure. I guess I would have to look at that study. I feel like I got a warped world.
And then there's
world.
Other studies that say the birth order isn't that relevant, but I have read that. And in my own anecdotal experience, I know, for example, well, I'm the youngest child.
Mm-hmm.
Aruba Ray is the youngest child.
I was just there last week.
Well, he's the youngest child.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an only child.
You're an only child.
Now, only...
Only may be a different category.
Only's got to be tough. I just feel like you got to be the center of attention for so long,
mm-hmm.
that I just feel like I don't know. I have assumptions about only children.
Like what?
Like they're probably they want to be the center of attention. That they're very special. They're used to feeling. I mean, to get your parents' full love.
Yeah.
Compared to someone who's splitting it 4 ways, that's a very different experience to go through life.
I don't think it's about splitting love. I think it is about splitting attention.
Sure. My mom split the love.
Well, here's just something. According to the study, the youngest child has a born to rebel mentality, that makes them more likely to be exploratory, unconventional, and tolerant of risk. And this theory is supported by the work of Dr. Kevin Lehman, a psychologist and the author of the Birth Order book and The Firstborn Advantage. But that's just one study.
Is he still alive, that guy?
How birth order and siblings affect success. This is from Business Insider. Firstborn children are more likely to be CEOs and other things your birth order can predict about your future. That's from Business Insider.
It's so hard. All these studies.
Who knows? There are studies that say these sorts of things.
There's this big crisis in psychology called the replication crisis, where they basically tried to recreate a lot of the classic psychological studies. And I think it was only 1/3 of them were replicable. And so whenever I hear this stuff now, I automatically go like, bullshit, bullshit, right. Bullshit, bullshit. Everyone came with the hypothesis they wanted. It's hard to take any psychology like that big and sweeping seriously.
Well, you may be right, or there may be something to it.
Sure.
So basically, I've said nothing.
Yeah.
but anecdotally, just asking people, I do think I see a larger percent, just when I ask comedians, I think I do seem to see more youngest children than not, but
I think I'm more what was affected was just this idea that I went to one house where my dad was like a bachelor, and he'd have a woman at the time, and they would just like shower me with affection. Then I go to my mom's where my stepdad was very strict and conservative, and I had other siblings, and I think that disjointedness is what made me into whatever kind of cynical. I feel like every comedian, part of being funny is I think you just see things, you see the angle you're not supposed to see of things. You're not supposed to realize the people who run the school are full of shit. You're not supposed to realize the president's lying to you. And I think something has to happen to skew your vision where you see the world differently. I think that's where mine came from.
I'd like, if I could, to end things, because we're almost out of the hour, as we began them with Les Mis. What were Cosette's solos in Les Mis? She didn't say On My Own was Eponine.
She's Castle on a Cloud, no?
Was that
a castle on a cloud?
Was that Gavroche or was that Eponine? Or was that Cosette?
Which you're the one who's literally sat with Jean Valjean. What did you even talk about?
Well, we didn't talk about this. Cosette, we talked about how do you like your steak and eggs?
Cosette's song Les Mis is here we go.
I don't think Cosette had any great numbers.
In my life, a heart full of love. I don't even know these ones. Ugh.
She didn't have any good ones, I don't think.
No, but she got the logo. She got to be.
She got the logo.
Front.
She got the logo. Yeah,
it's a cool logo. It's a
cool logo. A cool logo with
I it. Have that T-shirt.
You know you do.
Yeah, my parents really? Went to see Les Mis and got it for me like a million
That's
years
so cool.
ago.
I got it at a thrift store. You know you who you'd be in that show.
I'd be Thénardier, the
Which
innkeeper.
Was that? Yes, master of the house.
Yeah, with the Sacha Baron Cohen character.
Yes, yes, yes. Again, there's another Semitic man. Some people do go
that.
Like, he is hot. And other people are like, Borat? And my girlfriend be like,
I'll tell my husband. First of all, he's a brilliant comedic.
Brilliant.
You know, persona. So that would. He's a good. I think he used to model. I read somewhere he was a model before getting into.
First of all,
comedy.
You don't have to look anything up. Like, he's super hot, Sacha Baron
what
Cohen.
Does it mean, though? Like, you could say, I used to model because I did stock photos. I just feel like there's a certain point where
you
it's like.
Should, and you should say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you're right. The word model is a very loose term.
I was during Fashion Week. I was walking down the street. Someone came up to me and said, are you free right now to do a catwalk?
Good.
And I did a catwalk.
Amazing.
With an hour and a half notice.
No, you also used to model.
Yeah, you're right. Get the word out.
Doesn't Phil Hanley talk about that on
yeah,
stage?
Yeah, he made a living modeling, so I think.
But I believe he talks about like a very specific era of modeling that he called heroin chic.
That's right.
And that's
right.
Like when his, but very good looking. Very
that
good looking.
That was a time of heroin chic with Kate Moss in the 90s mm-hmm. when all this. But yeah, you 100% can put modeling on your.
Sure. Really awful to call something heroin chic. I mean, imagine someone's like, yeah, I'm fentanyl fat. It's like, it's just not. These are very serious, deadly drugs.
Well, I think in the 90s, you could say anything.
And that is true.
And nobody fucking cared.
Sure, sure.
And that was a look that was really heralded.
Do you think it's possible for a woman?
Women, like very skinny women, like that was what everybody aspired to.
Sure.
Do you think it's possible for a beautiful woman to talk about being a model in stand-up comedy? And have it work?
I think anything can work, but it's got to be, I think what happens right now, you see a lot of, especially in LA, very good-looking comics, both men and women, where they go like, dating is so hard. And you're like, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Everyone's swiping right on you. Shut the fuck up. Now, if you're a model, like I think like Jeselnik does this really well, where like you go like, I'm fucking good looking and I'm going to own it and I'm going to come off like a fucking asshole because of it. Then I'm like, at least you're being honest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when someone gorgeous goes up and
is
talks
Jeselnik
about like
model level gorgeous.
I think Jeselnik was considered like uniquely I always say it's for stand-up comedy. The bar is
yeah, the
right
for stand-up, stand-up comedy.
No, he's totally a good-looking,
Jeselnik's
like, cool.
Known as like a pretty okay. startlingly hand. I see those pictures of Jon Stewart outside McDougal, and I'm like, "Woo, Jon Stewart was fucking fine."
What about Bobby Kelly?
I haven't seen.
God, you have to see the pictures of him, right, Dan?
Well, in the old days, yeah, he was very good-looking. But so you're saying that Jeselnik was able to just make fun of it?
Now you make fun
by
of it.
By being an asshole.
Well, he's not like pretending he's not or pretending that life is hard for him in that way. He's never talking about that. So I think in LA, there's just a degree of like good-looking people where you like own it.
Yeah,
you got to own it. I think that's why people like Matt Rife. Matt Rife does not try to be like I'm, you know. I'm a little awkward too. He's like, I'm fucking stunning. And he makes jokes from that perspective. And I think people, that's why people are attracted to it.
Good looking people like him.
Yeah.
Is there a woman that's doing that? And would it be different if a woman tried to do that?
I mean, I've never listened to any woman do stand-up comedy, but I'm sure there's some. No, no, of course there are. I don't know. I don't know in that particular vein.
I mean, I don't know that. There are several women who are very good-looking who are six. Like, I mean, there's Nikki Glaser. There's Whitney Cummings. There's Chelsea Handler. I mean, they're all like great-looking. Great bodies. You guys hate women.
No, listen, let me make clear. No, you know what the problem is?
You know
the reason I'm hesitant?
You guys are misogynist.
No, the reason I'm being hesitant right now is I'm like, every female comic I know is beautiful and gorgeous. I'm willing to be like, this guy looks like a schlub. This guy is really hot. When it comes to women, I'm not going to sit here and be like, I'll tell you who's a fucking hottie.
Right.
Then I feel that I promise that is part of my hesitation. In my head, I'm like, oh, well, this person's super hot. But then I'm like,
but then you're implying that somebody else might not be.
Yeah. Or then I'm just being like, or then I worry I'm going to come off as being like, I like this comic because of their big fat tits instead of their big fat jokes.
Absolutely weak. Yeah.
Big fat premises.
We have
big fat chunks.
Yeah. How far the mighty have fallen, huh?
That is true. Anyway, we are done with our hour with John Marco.
I had a blast.
It was great to have you.
And we
back.
Do thank you. The Downside, wherever you can find podcasts.
Wherever. And it's on YouTube. People are watching these things these days. We have more views than listens.
Yes, that's... Who knew that would happen?
Who knew?
Who knew? You know, when MTV came out, I said, this is the stupidest thing ever. No, I really did. I said, why would you want to watch a song? A song is music. Music is audio. Why the fuck I want to watch it? Especially since the video... I mean, I might watch a band playing. But why do I want to watch Pat Benatar, and I bring this up because I just saw the video, flying a plane into Nazi-occupied territory to sing a song that has nothing to do with World War II?
You make a good point. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. But I will tell you, there are songs out there that when I love the music video,
you know,
I like the song more.
Yeah,
it attaches visuals to
it. But I got caught up in it. Yeah, I do like the videos. I mean, I was wrong, in other words. I was wrong about everything. Instagram.
You're like Thriller. I don't want to see a zombie.
The internet, the internal combustion engine, everything I said, this will never work. And it's going nowhere.
It is unique.
You know, the Wright brothers apparently had a hard time selling their idea for an airplane. They really did, because like, it couldn't do anything, really, at first. It could fly like 100 feet.
Sure.
With like one passenger, and they're like, well, what the fuck?
Half the time they died. I mean,
what the fuck are we going to do with this thing?
Yeah.
You know, this is, I guess, a fun little toy, but I don't see a future for this.
Is that true?
I might be exaggerating slightly, but...
That's hilarious.
But they did have, I think, a tough time. They were trying to sell it to the military, and the military was like,
what do we need this for?
You know, but because the truth is the first plane couldn't do a whole lot. But anyway, Gianmarco Soresi, The Downside. And, you know, hit him up on all the social media.
Please.
At G-I-A-N Marco.
Uh-huh.
S-O-R-E-S-I.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gianmarco. We'll see you next time on Live from the Table. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.